open up a written agenda. And open up a work session on House Bill 3614. We have in front of us a hand engrossed version of the bill that includes the dash 4, 6, and 7 amendments already amended into the bill. We also have in front of us a set of amendments. I guess we have a hand engrossed version of what we would do to add 10, 11, and 12, but we also have amendments 10, 11, and 12 before us, and we can act on those. Just to to raise one issue, some of you may have heard that there was a revenue forecast today that didn't wasn't overly optimistic, and at least I hope it wasn't overly optimistic, because it was bad enough if it wasn't. I conferred with the co-chair on Ways and Means to ask whether it would be preferable to take out the amendment we added in the last session that asked for $1 million and change that to leave it blank, or perhaps put a dollar in that line, knowing that Ways and Means are going to have to deal with it however they deal with it. And Representative Nolan suggests we not do that, that we leave the $1 million in, that that's what we're asking for, and that it be clear that that's what we're asking for. So I think that advice is probably good advice to take. So why don't we deal with these amendments one at a time? Can we have a motion on 10?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would move the adoption of the dash 10 amendments.
And the dash 10 amendments. Thank you very much, Representative Gelzer. We have a motion on the floor to adopt the dash 10 amendments, and the dash 10 amendments leave section 1, delete all of section 1 except the statement on streamlining and the statement that includes shall consider, as President Richardson proposed the other day.
Yesterday
was the other day. So it will now read, the department shall consider policies, procedures, and forms that streamline and simplify the state medical assistance program application process. And then it says, the next part isn't considering, it says in developing policies, procedures, and forms, the department shall consult with persons not employed by the department who have experience in serving vulnerable and hard-to-reach populations. Is there any discussion on the dash 10 amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, President Cannon.
You know, I certainly support and will support these amendments. I guess the precedent of asking the department to do something that it sort of ought to be doing generally is sort of a...
Or even says it is doing.
And I think to my point, this is a measure towards better customer service, if you will, and to call it out in statute, while I think appropriate given what we've heard about the department and the really critical need that they do this, does, you know, raise all sorts of questions for me about whether it suggests that the department or any state agency wouldn't be taking these steps if we didn't explicitly call for them to do so in statute. So, you know, I support this. There's clearly a need for this. We've heard that they plan to do it. While it may be slightly redundant, I don't object to it, but I just would raise that sort of general point, like, shouldn't we expect that they are doing this generally anyway?
Would you like Ms. O'Sullivan to comment on that, President Cannon? I'm sure she'd be,
sure.
Be happy to, from a department perspective, on what you just said. And we have LC in the room this afternoon, which is good to have adult supervision here. So.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Patricia O'Sullivan. I'm the Director of Public Policy for the Department of Human Services. Representative Cannon, I know what you're saying. It isn't unusual to direct us or encourage us to even do more or to continue on a road we're already going down. Directors change, people change, and sometimes things stated in law, although they seem redundant to you at that time, are good to have in the law to set a general direction for where we should be going. And the inclusion of outside folks into our development of new ways of doing things, it isn't always done in the department. We're moving more towards that, more inclusion, but it hasn't necessarily been done all the time in the past, so I don't see that as a bad message at all. And I'm very comfortable with this language. I don't think it's redundant. I think it's a good message to us.
I guess, Mr. Chair, it's a sort of more general question related not only to DHS but to other state agencies and their relationship with customer service and with the law, and whether in the absence of language that requires or says you shall consider streamlining, simplifying, providing better customer service, whether in the absence of that kind of language in the statutes you sort of sit back and say, well, no, I don't think we need to do this. That's not my impression of state agencies, and I'm not here to say in particular about DHS that would be the case, but it sets this sort of odd, potentially odd kind of precedent that it's only when state law says that they are required to find ways to simplify that they would do so. So I understand we're dealing with a kind of particular case here. I support this, particularly with the department's support in this case, but would sort of caution us about going down this road in a more general way.
The place that I've been most familiar with seeing these kind of salutatory statements are in budget notes, which is not uncommon to do something like this. Representative Maurer?
Just comment. Maybe Representative Cannon should move to the right of me, since he's suggesting something that is...
I would say he's far enough off to the right. Is there any other discussion on the Dash 11 amendments? I'm sorry, excuse me, on the Dash 10 amendments? Is there any objection to the Dash 10 amendments? And Representative, do you want to have a minute to look at those before we... Representative Flores?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm
Okay. Hearing no objections, the Dash 10s are added to House Bill 3614 as previously amended. Can I have a motion on the Dash 11 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 11 amendments to House Bill 3614. Move that they be adopted.
Thank you. We have a motion on the floor on the Dash 11 amendments, which I think state very nicely what it is we decided we want after discussion yesterday on rural. It suggests one grant that's predominantly for a rural area and at least one others that includes service to a rural area. Is there any discussion on the Dash 11s? Is there any objection to the Dash 11s? Hearing none, the Dash 11s become a part of House Bill 3614 as previously amended. And the Dash 12s. Do I hear an amendment on the Dash 12s?
Mr. Chair,
a motion on the Dash 12s.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 12 amendments to House Bill 3614.
And the function of the Dash 12, we have a motion before us to adopt the Dash 12 amendments. The function of the Dash 12 amendments is to add in the statement of the criteria to look at these grants the section that talks about integrated health care and lists a set of health care services, recommending that vision care be included in that as a criterion statement. Is there any discussion on the Dash 12 amendments? Is there any objection to the Dash 12 amendments? Hearing none, the Dash 12 amendments are added to House Bill 3614 as previously amended. We have for your help a hand-engrossed version of House Bill 3614 that has all the amendments on it that we have accepted, including the last three that we've just accepted now, just for reference as I'll accept the motion now to to approve House Bill 3614. Do you have a script on that, Madam Administrator?
For the motion.
For the motion. Okay. This will be a motion to the floor with subsequent.
I move that the committee adopt House Bill 3614 as amended.
No, I don't think we need to cite the amendments, but it's a motion to move it to the floor with a due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to.
Due pass recommendation and with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Right. Okay. The floor is open for discussion. We now have a perfected bill in front of us.
Mr. Chair, I think it looks lovely. I think we should go for it.
I want to comment that I think the committee has done extraordinary work on this. This has been a complicated bill that we've all been working very hard to get in the shape we want. I think we've done a great job. I think the DHS is to be complimented on this. They've worked with us in a way that, at least in my experience, is remarkable and been very much appreciated by us. And as always, the LC, who's Ms. Freeman, who's been with us very, very responsibly, very quickly, and we appreciate all those work. All in favor of that motion, please state aye when your name is called. And
aye.
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 Aye. Aye. And Godspeed to 3614 on his journey to Ways and Means and hopefully to the floor. The motion has passed, and 3614 is on the way to the floor, and then by prior reference to Ways and Means. I close the work session on 3614 and open a work session. We have a public hearing. Does anybody sign up for the public hearing? Open a public hearing on HJR 100. No sign up. Close the public hearing on HJR 100. Open a work session on HJR 100. Can I have a motion on HJR 100, please? Let's get the motion I want first. The vice chair is kindly offered to make a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt HJR 100.
Is
adopt
the right word?
It is.
Adopt. Okay.
It is.
Oh, it's a yes. This is a resolution.
Cool.
We have a motion on the floor. Is there any discussion on HJR 100?
Chair, I have a brief just comment.
Yes,
I think that we discussed this in detail earlier in this committee when the bill was first moved to be considered by the committee, and I would just reiterate that because of the nature of adding a provision in the as a fundamental right in the Constitution, that the consequences of that would be devastating to other programs because it will be funded from any sources that are available ahead of any other right that we might have for programs or benefits under the Constitution that are not designated as fundamental rights. And so I think that the long-term consequences of doing this would be negative for our state, and for those reasons and others previously stated, I think that it would be inappropriate to pass this motion.
Representative Richardson, it would help me. We're going to obviously have a floor discussion on this. It would help me if you could give me whatever documents you might have that would point that out, that having this in Article 1 as opposed to creating its new article, somehow Article 1 rights would require prior priority oversight. And is it Article 3 where the education?
I forget
which is. I think it may be Article 3 that the education.
Happy to. There's case law on it's the standard that courts use in evaluating.
Very useful for me to have that. Also, let me say there was a companion bill. There is a companion bill, House Bill 3615, that was a ballot title, and I know there was concern with sending forth a ballot title. And at the moment, I could say it's in rules, but I have no intention at the moment of moving that forward. We'll do it without.
Good. That's good.
Didn't want to add that inflammatory piece to the discussion. So.
Appreciate that consideration for the system.
Is there any other issues, Mr.
Very briefly, my position has been stated numerous times before, and we won't have to go through that. But, you know, we can't get a much more philosophical debate than this one in government. And I think at the end of the day, it's not about beating each other up, so to speak. It's just about your philosophical center and what you believe the role of government is. And the role of government in society in the larger context, and the role of Oregon in leading the country, and the role of the country leading other countries on this planet. And believe that this ultimately does not serve humanity in a positive manner. And so we'll obviously be voting against it. But I'm also very cognizant and believe that your sincerity and your position is not per se politically motivated, but philosophically motivated, and so I respect that.
Thank you, Representative, very much. I've been studying to prepare for the floor speech on this, and it's been very interesting to look back into the philosophical position of where rights come from and how they're determined, and I hope to be more steeped in it before we get into that, but it is there are some very interesting writings on where rights come from and who decides, but it's clear in the United States that ultimately we can have positions on it, but through one form or another it's really the people that ultimately decide operationally what's a right in American society. And even in the sense of the original Bill of Rights, which followed from the statement in the Declaration of Independence about the inalienable rights that God has given us, the Constitution went to the states originally without the Bill of Rights, and the people reacted that we wanted to have some rights. In this case, rights that protected the people from the government, because the wrong that right was trying to deal with was the wrong that the king had inflicted on Americans over the past 75 or 100 years before that time. So the question is, how do we get the people's expression on this? And I think that's essentially what we're trying to, what my intention is here, is to get the expression on the people on the extent to which there's been sufficient wrong in modern time around this healthcare system to create a right to redress some wrong. And it's taken that debate we had, which I admired very much, as you all know, the other day, took me back to my student days, and I'm finding it interesting to be studying again. First, I'm Bonamici. Did you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I wanted to make a comment.
Incidentally, Representative Bonamici's husband is my mentor on this one.
Thank you. I wanted to make a comment that about the purpose of this HJR 100, but you did it much more eloquently than I could. And that's what this does is we're asking the people of Oregon to make this choice. And I know that we differ on this committee and in this body on the issue, but what we're doing here is asking the people of Oregon if they want to declare that healthcare is a fundamental right. And I believe when we talk about the source of rights,
what you said, is that ultimately it's up to the people, and it's a question that the people will have to answer, and that's the purpose of the resolution. So I will be supporting it, and I look forward to the discussions, not only in this body, but also in the, our communities and in our state about the issue, and I thank you for bringing it to the forefront.
Yeah.
The discussion and the positions that are brought forward certainly apply to a democracy. And there's no question that the people have a right to determine what their rights are going to be. But our form of government is a representative democracy. And my understanding of the reason that we have that is so that citizens will say to their representatives that they elect in each of the 60 districts and 30 senates in our senate districts in our state, you go and represent us. You do the research. You determine what the unintended consequences are going to be from matters. Look into things thoroughly and then make a determination that will be for the benefit of our district and our state long term. And so here we're faced with a very brief and a very attractive amendment to the Constitution. I mean, who is not in favor of having everybody have affordable access to health care? But buried within that brief statement are consequences which are far-reaching. Financial consequences, budgeting, ways and means, taxation, revenue sources, priorities of funding, and those kinds of deep consequences and factors that are involved in the implementation of a brief and attractive statement are the things that will that should be determined by a representative body, because that's what we've been sent here to do. And certainly if it makes it through the system and it goes to the vote and it gets passed, it's going to be an interesting experiment, because Oregon will be the first state to essentially say, we want socialized medicine. Because that ultimately will be the result of having the legislature ordered to find a system, in my opinion, to find a system of affordable universal access to health care. Because, I mean, ultimately, when you break it all down, you either end up with, based on our experience and our history in Oregon, the state doing it or the state setting forth mandates and requirements which then essentially order insurance companies to become surrogates for the state. And the state and the insurance companies are private, yes, but they're so limited in the benefits that they can and can't provide that they essentially become surrogates directed by the state as to, you know, what they're supposed to do. And so that's, you know, that's why I think that we need to just remember that if it was a pure democracy, then we wouldn't be sent here, but we are being sent here, and this is a very complicated and complex issue. And so, I mean, certainly there's room for people to see it differently and to see the outcomes and anticipate differently and be even willing to just see what's going to happen, because we're not making a whole lot of progress without taking bold action. I certainly understand that. But we have a huge challenge with this, because it seems so attractive, and out of 30-second sound bites, there could be a lot of people that would vote for it who later on might find it difficult to determine how are we going to pay for it, who's going to pay for it, and what's it going to cost, which will be, those are the million-dollar questions. But by then, it's in the Constitution, and we will then be required to make it work or make it happen.
Yeah, and I would like to comment at least to the first part, at least to the republic versus democracy. If you believe that rights, for example, the Bill of Rights of the American Constitution, belong in the Constitution, the founders of the state of Oregon and the framers of the Oregon Constitution only allow one way to amend the Constitution, and that's by a vote of the people. So they declared in 1859 that changes in the Constitution were not going to be on a representative basis, but were going to be on a broad democratic basis. So if you believe this right should be in the Constitution, we have no option except to send it to the people. They did not endow us with the power to change the Constitution. I think that's a problem incidentally. And I think when we finally have our next constitutional convention, in line with the bill Representative Vakian and I floated in last session, we might then have that power, but currently this is the only way to do it. Who do we have in order? Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr.
And
Chair.
And then I have Representative Flores and Representative Cannon and then Representative Yeltsin.
we beat this subject to death in our pre-session meeting, so I don't want to go over this the same country that we've already been over. The only issue that I know I personally didn't discuss when we had that other meeting was the issue of our desire to send out this choice to the Oregon people about whether or not they consider this a right or not. And I'd only say for our consideration that we're transcending, if that's the right word, into a world where the rights that everybody at this table, this dais, agrees are rights. We've gone from a world of negative obligation rights, and now we're entering the world of positive obligation rights. Now, leaving the health care issue aside, because as Representative Maurer said, there's not a single person at this table that doesn't think that health care for every individual in Oregon is the right thing to happen, however we get there. I'm worried that we're having a debate about sending out something to the people of Oregon that maybe they'll accept, maybe they won't accept. Where does that, I mean, it's a very slippery slope argument. Where do we stop in that? I mean, I can make a... Not to be flippant, you can make, I think any social demographer could make a very strong argument of why it's essential for kids, my two kids that are 9 and 6, to have an adequate backyard to play in so they can exercise, so they can, you know, they can burn calories, so we don't have, you know, kids that are addicted to video games outside playing on bikes and things like that. Well, you know, we... urban growth boundary suburbia, maybe my backyard isn't sufficient to meet the health requirements of my children, objective health requirements of my children, and maybe I don't feel safe in my particular neighborhood about them having in the front. So could I make an argument that said it ought to be my child's right, I'm just using one example, but it ought to be my child's right to have adequate backyard space to plan? If that's the case, you know, is there a world, that's the only example I could think of in like that, but is there a situation where we're saying it to the Oregon people, and Oregon people could say, yeah, that's, you know, kids should have adequate backyard space plan. And if that's the case, where does this end? Where do these positive obligation rights end? They're all good things. Healthcare is good. Big backyards are good. And anything other positive thing that people have to pay for somewhere or another are all good. But if we open up that Pandora's box, where does it end, Mr. Chair? And that's one of my biggest reservations about
it. I guess it ultimately ends with the vote of the people. Yeah, I think if there were a firm enough movement and 31 members of the House and 16 members of the Senate said that we ought to submit to the people the question of whether everybody has a right to have a large backyard, and that's just an example. It could be a variety of other things. It could be food. It could be shelter. Then I think that is where it ends. It ends with the people.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chair? Mm-hmm. Are we, as Representative Richardson said, are we doing our best for our constituents, for the not only our personal constituents but the constituents of the state, if we do that, if that's our default mode, that it's hey, let's not use our best judgment necessarily. Maybe that is our best judgment, but maybe it's not, yet we're still sending this out to the people of Oregon. I mean, we're elected to be the best judgment, if you will, for the people of Oregon.
That's right, and we do have a choice, right? I mean, we could statutorily do something to encourage big backyards. I mean, seriously, or recreation. Real recreation opportunities
tax
for
kids. Tax deductions for interest. I mean, that's to promote purchasing homes. Yeah.
And but that's, you could have a bigger tax deduction for a bigger
backyard. That's a much different thing, though, than saying it's a right for my child to have a big backyard.
That's exactly right. Okay. Representative Flores?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, as well, will not go into my previous objections entered in our prior discussions on this in order not to prolong, but I would like to just bring it back into our more immediate context, and I will repeat comments that I had made in that regard, and that is the purpose of this trial annual session, as it was originally contemplated, to my understanding, was that we were to come here and to deal with consensus bills. We were to come here to deal with bills that did not have a high level of controversy, and that we were to probably avoid those complex and complicated issues, as Representative Richardson has just stated, could bog us down in a session that is not scheduled to be more than, 29 days or 20 days or what have you, more or less. And this doesn't fit the criteria. Now, I understand that as a result of whatever agreements were reached, that you had been assured that this would be come forward this session. I do understand that. But nonetheless, it has still doesn't fit the criteria, and I will just profoundly agree with Representative Maurer that I trust that this is, for you, not a political wedge issue, that it is a passion of your heart, and I do agree with that. However, I have less confidence that it is not the case within other elements, that this is certainly a platform for political theater, that it is a table setting for the current campaign cycle, and I just think that it's just terrible timing to be considering it right now for all of those reasons. And so I know you know that I will be casting a negative vote.
Thank you, Representative. That does remind me, I'd like to ask Madam Administrator if she would please enter the testimony and comments from the LC 91 discussions into the record for HCR 100, so those discussions will become a part of the record. Thank you. Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may be ground that you covered during the last debate, most of which I missed, but I've been thinking a bit about what it would mean to put this health care right on par with the right to education, which is at least, I think, implicitly granted and possibly explicitly granted in Oregon's Constitution. And in particular, sort of what this means in terms of government's obligation, the state of Oregon's obligation. The fact is we don't write an unlimited check towards education. The state of Oregon does not provide unlimited funding to education, despite this constitutional right. When budgets are tight, we cut education services. We cut teachers. We cut libraries. We cut electives. But we don't cut off kids. And similarly, there's nothing about this constitutional amendment, as I read it, that provides for a particular level of health care benefits. It does express the notion that I firmly believe in, that we should provide some measure of health care for all Oregonians. And when budgets are tight, undoubtedly that level will decline, but we won't, if this passes, I think, be able to simply say to a certain set of Oregonians, you do not qualify, you are not entitled to health care. So I think the analogy with education is instructive, and it's very helpful for me to sort of move forward with that in mind. Of course, I will be supporting this and appreciate, again, once again, this discussion.
Representative Gilzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I want to build on what Representative Cannon said. Ironically, when the Archimedes Project kind of got off the ground and there was a lot of parallel made to the public education system, one of my objections to that was that we certainly haven't in our public education system reached a set of equity where every child everywhere, even though we say that we have a uniform system of public education, we know that there are great disparities in the opportunities that are available to our children depending upon where they live, either within our state or, since this is a national commitment, across our country. Certainly the type of education that a student living in inner city Harlem is able to get is very different than the experience that a student has in the city of Corvallis or the city of Lake Oswego. So I don't believe that putting this in the Constitution commits us to funding in a way that's been raised here. I also don't believe that it ties us to a system of socialized medicine. And if I were to follow that system all the way out, it would tell me that Senate Bill 329, that the only outcome for that could be a system of socialized medicine. And I don't think that that's the intention that anyone has there. I mean, what I read here is that the Legislative Assembly should establish by law a plan for a system designed to provide every legal resident of the state access to effective and affordable health care on a regular basis. As a legislature, we develop plans and we establish by law incentives to accomplish all sorts of goals that we might have that the government itself might not directly do. We established a plan to increase renewable energy jobs within the state of Oregon through a system of tax credits and tax incentives. We urge people to have their own homes and to purchase homes through a home mortgage tax deduction. So there's a whole variety of ways that we establish a plan to develop a policy goal. And I don't believe that there is necessarily a single outcome to what that plan might look like. I think that probably amongst those of us at the table, we all have different plans and different desires for how we think this plan might ultimately look. And I also think that none of us has that plan. If we did, we'd be there, and it would be a much easier task for the Senate Bill 329 group to be working to implement that plan. And I think the last thing that I would want to raise, and I really wrestled with this idea of the February session, and is this an appropriate thing to have, and is it a launching board for campaign types of issues? I want to echo what a couple of other folks have said. I think that in terms of the chair of the committee who brings this to us, this is clearly not a political issue. This is a deep passion that is reflective of a life of work that has been focused on improving the health of Oregonians and of all people. And I think that there's always the risk, anytime we put something on a ballot, that there becomes a political issue to it. Whether we had adopted this last year or adopted it now, it would still be on the ballot in November, which is a time when campaigns happen as a part of a campaign year. And I think that we certainly have other issues that we're wrestling with during this February session that I think we would be naive to believe wouldn't be turned into campaign issues in the fall. And to be clear about one of them, next week we're going to vote on driver's licenses. And my guess is that there are a couple of us that will take votes that will not play favorably for us in campaign literature in the fall. So I think that's the nature of the work that we do here, the choices that we make on difficult issues. We do this in a public place, in a public setting, and then in election cycles, people tell us what they think about the whole collection of our ideas. But for the record, I do believe that this is a committee of folks that cares a lot about healthcare, that is concerned about creating a system of healthcare that does provide access to people all across the state of Oregon. And I certainly do not question the motives of anyone that has a no vote or anyone that has a yes vote. I don't believe a yes vote is a vote for socialized medicine. I don't believe a no vote is a vote against access. And I really have appreciated the high quality of the debate and the discussion around this issue over the course of the past month. I've learned a lot. And like Representative Bonamici, I look forward to the continued discussions about this issue. I imagine discussions about health care, what it means, what it is, how to get it to everyone, is not a discussion that's going to end anytime soon, and certainly not this coming November.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Those in favor of adopting HJR 100 and sending it to the floor with a due pass recommendation, we'll say aye and answer the roll call. Susan, will you call the roll, please?
Aye.
No.
Cannon?
Aye.
No.
Aye.
No.
Vice Chair Kotek?
Aye.
Vice Chair Richardson?
No.
Aye. Motion passes. I'll carry it on the floor with any help I can get from any of my friends here. I do want to echo what's just been said. I really do appreciate the tone of this debate. This is a debate about very deeply held beliefs about the nature of government, the nature of our society. And I hope we can continue on this plan. I would ask, as a personal favor to me, we each do everything we can to keep this on that level, a debate about a very tough issue, and do whatever we can. And it's always difficult. I think Representative Flores is right. And this is a time when it's hard to keep political theater out of our discussions. We do everything we can on this one to keep it out, because I think yes or no, this vote will be important to the people. It will be timely, as I believe, for the dealing with the report of the SB 329 process, the Oregon Health Fund Board, which I hope incidentally we'll have a report from on Tuesday. I think this will help illuminate that, and I think keeping it at this level, I very much appreciate that. I'll close the work session on HJR 100. Ask if there's any other business to come before us. Madam Chair, do you have?
No, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Our meeting on Monday will be our informational with Mr. There's a 9:30 meeting.
That's great.
Just
show the Friday night.
We're adjourned.